Good evening, everybody. It's another Tuesday, another week here at the Focus TV. We're so happy to be here. Lots to talk about, lots that's happened. No matter where you looking at the sports world, a lot has happened. Octavia is over here happy. She's already over here playing fantasy football while we're on air.
Always.
You make that trade or no?
Nah, I guess we trade.
Okay, cool. It was a bad trade.
Pretty much.
I heard Deion Lewis' name, so I figured it was a bad trade.
He won my running back.
All right, so tonight, we're blessed tonight to have members of Team Thrill in the building. We're going to get to talking to those gentlemen in just a little bit from the WNBA standpoint. If you guys aren't following, which, you know, after all the, you know, the imploring we've done to tell you guys to do so, the Washington Mystics have come home. They're playing tomorrow night, George Mason, for Game 3. It's a pivotal Game 3. It's literally a win or stay home. The season will end if they do not get a win tomorrow night. Cardell. You know, we talked about this series going into it. We've seen a lot of things happen. We've shared our keys to this series coming into the series. Nothing's really, you know, the things we said Washington needed to do in order to win, they've literally done none of them at all. any of them at all. And shout out to Erin Atkins today. She was pretty much like, you know, we put ourselves in this position. It's a very, very, very... you know, from a rookie, it's refreshing to hear that. You know, I mean, they put themselves in this position. What do you think right now? Heading into tomorrow's pivotal Game 3?
I need better hit some shots. Sometimes it just comes down to that. Going 0 for 16 from 3 for a team that rely on 3.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it. And they got to get back to being on the string defensively. You know, Stewie's doing whatever she wants. She's destroying their front line, whoever's on her. And... you know, it's forcing Tabor to have to make adjustments with TRP, put guards on it that's not scared to, you know, bang with her, be physical with her. And, you know, when they do that, that's when they seem to come back, you know what I mean? But the problem with that is they can't score enough with that lineup. So, you know, it's the role players are playing well, the rookies playing well.
Yeah.
Hey, man, then, you know, the stars got to show up, Solomon and Deladon, simple as that.
Yeah, and shout out to, you know, when we were talking about our WNBA awards, we mentioned a certain person on Seattle's team. And I'm not talking about the MVP, I'm talking about Natasha Howard. She's someone else who's played a big role in this series, literally doing whatever she wants, doing such a great job after she screens, getting to the basket, really exploiting, as you said, they've been dominating Washington's bigs. I talked to her today, one thing she pointed out, she talked about the experience she got by playing behind Sylvia Fowles and Rebecca Brunson in Minnesota. Saying that, you know, Sue's not the only one that had experience in that regard. But we're going to talk about that a little bit more later in terms of keys to Game 3. And also, we were at media availability this morning. You know, we got some good stuff, but we're not going to show you guys everything. Also, last night at – I'm getting confused. So tomorrow's George Mason. Last night was GW. We're doing a whole lot of moving right now. So, man, last night at GW, Team USA, the women's team, they're getting ready for Worlds. That starts September 22nd. They sent the list out earlier today, the 16 finalists. That being said, last night, you know, they were able to beat Japan 102-87, but it wasn't an easy win. Japan was getting in them for a good three quarters. There was nothing Team USA could really do. Their guards were being abused by Japan's. Japan's ball movement was exceptional. And then, you know, finally someone had enough. Shout out to Tiffany Mitchell, Indiana Fever, kind of really started that defensive run. It was a 21-2 run that pretty much put the game away in the fourth quarter. But I know you tweeted a lot about a couple special players on the Japan side. You want to just talk a little bit about one of them?
The young girl, was she 18, 19 years old?
19 years old, yeah.
Man, she looked like she American. They imported her by the way she played her style. It looked like she came from here, but I mean, that's basically all the chance they had. They had to make threes, you know, their guards, you know, out. For the most part, three quarters outplayed USA guards. You know, tell Don Staley put those dogs in to make sure they ain't lose. You know, but bottom line is they couldn't handle them. You know, USA up front. You know, Asia Wilson, who she, you know, MVP type potential, 26 points off the bench. She just destroyed them. I mean, they was throwing quadruple teams at her, and she was still scoring through them. It was child's play out there. And then Boone K doing what she do, pitching in with 22-10. So. You know, that's. I mean, they could have really jumped on him early, but I think Don Staley just wanted to see, you know, some different, you know, lineups and just wanted to set some people out, you know, so give them a fair shot to make the team. But, you know, Japan, credit to them. They weren't scared at first. They came to play, but, you know, the talent overwhelmed them in the fourth.
Yeah, and it was cool. We got a chance, you know, this Diana, Sue, they're not going to play forever. Right. Got a chance to kind of see the guards behind those very, very special players. It's been, it feels like forever.
They look like
forever. You know, Sue's 37, Diana's getting close. You know, you got to find out who's behind them, and WNBA definitely has some special guards, some young guards coming up. We're going to take a quick break here at the Focus TV, and when we get back, get into this conversation with Team Thrill. Welcome back to the Focus TV. As promised, we get into this conversation with Team Thrill. Cardell, go ahead and start us off.
How's it doing, Coach?
Yes,
how
sir.
How did Team Thrill come about for those who may not be aware outside of the area?
The program actually started about 7 years ago. We were BMO's Finest before, so we were already an Under Armour program. Then we transitioned to Team Thrill about 3 years ago. So myself, I partnered with Will Barton, so the name Thrill comes from Will, so Will the Thrill Barton. So Will and I decided to get together and just take it to another level, a bigger level, a bigger platform in AAU basketball. So that's where the Under Armour partnership, the Thrill name, and that's where it all derived from, that relationship with myself and Will Barton.
As for Barton, how hands-on is he with the program? You know, some guys just take my name, recruit the best players. Is he the type to do that, or is he the type when I'm home, I'm getting in the gym with the players, I'm going to show them the ropes, I'm going to have a coach? You know, how hands-on is he with the program?
Extremely hands-on, from recruitment to development to game planning to coaching. Like in the summer, he travels, he sits on the bench, he coaches the teams. With our camp, he's hands-on. These guys, I mean, he plays one-on-one with these guys. We play five-on-five with these guys. So he doesn't live outside of Baltimore in the summer. He lives home. So it's every day. He's, like, with us every day. So he's very hands-on. More than I've seen most professional athletes. Like I said, during the season, he lives in Denver. On the offseason, he lives home. So he's with us most of the time.
Y'all beat him yet? Yeah, I'll ask it. Be problem, but Baltimore has been a deep area, you know, for talent for years, decades, generations. It's a lot of competition for that talent. What makes Team Thrill stand out, you know, acquiring that talent?
I think what separates us from most programs is that we have talent from top to bottom. So from young, from first grade all the way up. So our first grade team won national championship last year at AU. So we not like most programs who may have a stud who get a deal that way, or you know somebody, you get a deal. We actually started as a rec program, and we built it off one team after another. So the bulk of our talent is coming up the pipeline, starting with this 2020 group. These are kind of like the foundation of kids that we built the program on. So last year was only our second year on the high school side, first year 17U. So the expectation will be different going forward because our talent is now coming up the pipeline. These are kids that grew up together, been together. So it's going to look a lot different going forward, coming up, because traditionally these kids have grown together through the program. They are the program.
As for the players, y'all can answer one by one. What drew you to Team Thrill in the first place?
What drew me to Team Thrill was basically the grind that they had and the grittiness, the will to get better. And that fits my personality. I always want to get better and try to be the best at everything I do while putting myself in uncomfortable situations.
It was more so opportunity for me because he presented me with, first off, I'm a Denverite, so he just told me anytime that I want to get in the gym, just call. And we get a team together, we all playing hard. Everybody is like competition. So that's what I like most about it, because nobody never going back down.
I mean, they push you, no lack, and they don't want you to lack at all. They push you to make you get better. I mean,
the overall mission for Team Thrill?
The overall mission is basically to take kids, inner city kids. I was going to say young men, but we're starting our female side of the program this year too. So young student athletes, and just present them with as many opportunities as possible. I mean, Baltimore is not only known for basketball, we're known for a lot of other things. So what we're trying to do is change the narrative. So just a lot of positive things, a lot of positive outlets, and good mentorship. Because at the end of the day, that's what a lot of kids are just missing: positive role models, good mentorship, people who actually care, people who are consistent, that show them all the time that they're there. And that's kind of what we like to show our players, that we're consistent, whether it's on the basketball court, whether it's at home, whether it's in the school. Like, I'll show up to any of their schools. They know that if they need anything, I'm going to be there 110%. They can all attest to that. Anybody in the program can. It's consistent.
Big time right there. Jordan, you know, one question I definitely want to ask you: how tough is it balancing academics and being a standout in football and basketball? You basically going year-round, so to speak. So how tough is that?
It's very tough, but it's also what you make it. Right. It's all about time management and just having that type of attitude, like, I can get it done, just being confident in what you want to do. So you just gotta have that confidence. You have the confidence, you can do whatever you want.
Okay. Jamal, so you won the state championship with Dunbar last year. You transferred to St. Francis. Tell folks that may not have seen you play yet, what are you going to bring to St. Francis?
First off, my energy. Mm-hmm. I love just motivating the team. Like, if I was always told, if you're not leading verbally, then lead by your actions. And that's one thing that I am known for, being that energy, that force on the floor.
Hey, that's a good trade to have, man. Carlos came front. Been hearing about you for a couple of years. Finally caught up with you at the Super 80. You know, you did your thing. You at St. Francis, so you going head-to-head with arguably the top point guard in the area every practice. Ace Baldwin, you know, how can those daily battles help you improve, not only just help you improve, but help St. Francis overall improve?
Just work hard, compete against them.
Man, a few words.
I was like, when I first started playing basketball, like, I always imagined, because I haven't been playing basketball for that long. It's only like my fifth year.
Was it another sport you were playing before that?
No. I just started like seventh grade. And I just kind of, like, I always wondered what it felt like to start earlier. But I was talking to my dad, and he was saying, like, if he don't think that if I would have started earlier, I wouldn't have the heart and hustle and motor that I have now. So that's why I kind of started just starting late. Just want to get better.
All right. But Jordan, as Cardell said, talk about football already. Which one's your first love, basketball or football? Can you choose one?
My first love was basketball. But as of right now, I'm in between both sports and understanding the game in both sports, still learning more, developing more. So it's still just a path for me that I had to choose.
Is there anything, you know, talking about both sports as you continue to learn, where you can take something from the football side of things and translate it to the basketball?
Definitely. Definitely. Like, it, as far as the athleticism, reading things before they happen and just reacting and being quick on my toes, that comes from basketball, and that helps me playing safety on football. I see things before they happen and just reacting. The attitude and the will to win increased as I started playing football, and that also helped me in basketball, because you got to compete every single play in football. You take one play off, that's a touchdown. And my one job is to stop people from scoring. So that's just how it translates.
All right. For you, Coach, you talked about the grit of your team. Is that something where they already came with that, or something kind of instilling them?
It's a combination. I think they feed off a lot of them feed off my attitude, because I'm in most cases no nonsense, and I work hard. They see me work hard in everything I do. Jordan just asked me on the way here, do I sleep? Very rare. It's very rare that I sleep. I have multiple jobs within the city. Within our program, I run the Junior NBA Baltimore. I work for Baltimore City Rec and Parks. I'm a school teacher in the Baltimore City Public Schools, and I run the AAU program. So So literally, I do a lot. So they see that. So I try to lead by example. So I show them through my actions how hard I work, and I expect that in return. So it's going to be hard for them not to give me 110% if I'm giving them 150%. It's going to be hard. And they respect that. So it's easy for me to get the most of them because I give them all of me.
All right, for you guys, all of you individually, I guess from a basketball standpoint, what means more to you guys, getting a stop, or, you know, you guys were talking about somebody punching on somebody earlier. So what's more, catching the body or getting a stop?
Getting a stop.
Getting a stop.
Definitely getting a stop. I love defense. So I love it.
So what part is it? Just the feeling of taking something from somebody, or
taking somebody hard away from them?
Yeah, if they can.
I'm gonna take his heart.
Defense win championships, and I love championships. So,
so with you guys, I know one of the most annoying things, no matter what the sport is somebody that doesn't get tired defensively. What's it like when you see your opponent, like literally, like I'm sure you can tell, when they're kind of like, "Will you just please go away? Stop bothering me. Leave me alone." Well, what's that feeling like? Do you get excited when you know, like, if they're at that breaking point?
I mean, you got their heart. They don't want no more. Like, that means they ain't work harder than you. They ain't put in that work. They don't have the pride. So they shouldn't be on the floor with you.
Especially, they always looking back for you. So anytime that they on a break or something like that, they always watching that back to see if you coming to chase it down.
You on their mind. You think about it.
And it's hard to forget that.
Coach, one thing that happened this summer, a lot of rule changes as far as the NCAA, affecting high schoolers and AAU.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on all those changes?
I haven't really digested it all. I'm kind of – it's still sorting itself out for what the grassroots basketball summer will look like. But for me personally, it's business as usual. Like I said, we have kids that aren't on the high school circuit that are still in the program. So it's still business as usual. Like this year, I'm coaching fourth grade during the fall. So for me, just – and I'm coaching 17U on the back end. So that's a drastic difference between 9 and 10-year-olds and then kids at that last year of AAU basketball. So for me, it's just business as usual, helping as many kids as I can. Like I said, we started in a rec center with a group of kids that are just about 90% of them are still in the program. Like our 2021 team is a special team, talented. I started that team together years ago, 2022 right behind them. Like, we have a lot of talent coming up the pipeline. So my goal is to make sure they're developing on and off the court. So whatever opportunity that presents itself during the summer, we're prepared for whatever that looks like.
Okay. We all three. Keep it real. Y'all going to pull out the trifecta? Y'all going to win the MIAA-BC Alhambra?
Type of question.
I like the confidence, man. Players come here to home and don't hoop you.
Because they know they got to play us.
Yeah, anything else?
No, that's it. You covered everything, man.
Man, thoroughly enjoyed y'all.
Yeah, appreciate y'all having us. Thank you.
Wish y'all the best of luck this upcoming season. Please keep us updated.
Thank you.
How everything goes.
Right.
As I said, wish you the best. Hope Team Thrill continues to prosper. And your high school teams as well. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, but before we do so, you know, we got every week, the breakdown series, Jamal Hayward over at 9450. This week's breakdown move is spinning off a defender. The option from the high post, again, is a spin off defender option from the high post. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Pleasure, bro.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Focus. Man, Ronnie, you are a guy, man. All day, y'all don't know what happened, man, but fun times here at the Focus. Want to thank Coach Dobbins and the young men. Team Thrill so much. It was Carlos Alexander, Jamal West, and Jordan Toles for coming through, man. I think of all the kids we've had come on here, young student athletes, I've never seen a group as a whole perk up talking about defense. It warmed my heart oh so much. Every single one of their eyes lit all the way up. My man Carlos was quiet, so few words. Got to talk about taking someone's heart, and he was right up on the mic, ready to talk.
He just played real loud. He was freshman too, true freshman. He's the problems, man.
That's
you heard, man. Like, he rumbling best point guard in the area already, so that tells you what it is. So
Oh, that's amazing.
It's gonna be fun to watch though.
Yeah, like that's
it'll be real fun.
Just want to thank those guys for coming through, man. It was definitely fun times. As we talked about at the beginning of the show, WNBA Finals. We're headed into Game 3. Had an opportunity today to go to media availability a little bit. Not going to talk to you guys too much because then you won't watch the videos that we got. So we can't do too much. Get over to FightersMag.com and MyMindOnSports.com. For your latest focus coverage. But got a chance to talk to, Cardale Super rookie, Ariel Atkins today. She's in the same place she always is. I asked her about, just what it's like to have to perform for your team in such a big stage. Just like, we've never seen it. The moment looked too big for her, like yet, where it's just like, oh my God, you're a rookie, like for real. And she was just talking about just basketball. She's just even keeled, man. It's always refreshing talking to her. She's a person of very few words as well. Mm-hmm. But as you said, you talk about Carlos, her play has done enough talking this year. Volume turned all the way up. She was also just talking about, as I said earlier, they did that to themselves. And to hear that from a rookie, again, I don't want to keep saying rookie, but to hear that from her, not too surprising, but the team felt like they're loose and they're focused. They know what's in front of them. From Seattle, it's going to be a good match of wills because Seattle's ready to end this thing. That's what's in their mind. They're not ready to play around. I asked both Natasha Howard and Jordan Cannon about last series. When they were up 2-0 on Phoenix, too, and that ended up going 5. So they don't really want to repeat it. That both of them talked about, you can't overlook Washington. Washington's not gonna lay down for them to just go ahead and, for them to go ahead and cap this sweep off if it were to happen. As such, so going into Game 3, if you guys just want to share some of your thoughts.
Like I said, man, hit some shots, man, and I like Atkins, she didn't shoot well. I like her aggressiveness. She had that from opening tip. A couple of the starters, it's like they waiting to hit. Seattle not waiting. They coming with haymakers from the jump. They got to match that intensity. That's what got them blown out in Game 1.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And they kind of got behind the A ball a little bit, in Game 2, and then they regrouped quicker, and then they was in the game and played smarter down the stretch, man. Washington had 7 turnovers, but 5 came in the 4th.
Yeah.
And 2 off Tyler, one of your point guards. That can't happen. And you only lost by 2. You ain't hit no 3-pointers. What saved you is your excellent free throw shooting, obviously. But Seattle hit 6 threes. They didn't shoot much better from the field, and they won by 2 because down the stretch, they were more poised and they made better decisions. They played smarter. Including, I believe, they held Deladon scoreless, which is big, So. Like I said, Atkins, she's the key because they haven't really been. She missed shots, but they really can't guard her.
Yeah, no, they can't.
I think she understands that. So, I would expect the ball to kind of give her more of a heavy dose. Cause I would love to see the ball in her hands as the game went down. Because even if everything break down, the play break down, hey, man, she's still athletic enough to make something happen. Even if it's a pass or a shot, she going to find a way. You know what I'm saying? Because right now, she's the most athletic player on that team. So, he sees her every day in practice. Maybe it's just little things he's not sure about. But, they were right there in Game 2. So, right now, it is what it is. They got to take it one game at a time. Don't get the W tomorrow.
Yeah, Cardale basically said everything. But I think what they really need to focus on is what got them there in the first place. You can't go 0 for 16 from shooting for threes and expect to win a game when that's a big part of your game, your skill set as a team. So I think they just need to kind of reel it back in. I think they need to keep their emotions in check as well. Sometimes they kind of get out of pocket and out of how they play their game. So I just think if they calm it down and everybody does what they're supposed to do, it'll work itself out. It's a really tough team for them to play against, but it's not that it's not doable, Just like Cardo just said, Seattle is ready to end it all. They already been through the whole we up 2 games and have to walk it all the way back down to a 5-game series. And I'm sure they don't want to do that in the finals. And I'm sure the Mystics don't want to go home getting swept in your first ever finals appearance. So I think the game is going to be a really good game. Hopefully they all come out ready to play and get the W and push for a longer series.
And man, one other thing. They got to do something about Natasha Howard. Like, she's killing them off just energy plays. Like, pick a roll, and she just slipping to the basket and by herself laying it up. I mean, getting offensive rebounds. She had 5 the last game. I think the Mystics as a whole only had 6. You see what I'm saying? She had 5 by herself. I mean, her energy is killing them. Those extra possessions are hell, man. You know, that's what giving them extra chances at points and stuff. And, you know, I mean, they're pros. Like, they might miss the first shot, but they're in rhythm, and they spot it up, and everybody's scrambling, and they spot up. 9 times out of 10, they're going to make that shot. So they got to do something about her. They got to match her physicality. Like I said, when they put the bench in with them dogs coming, you know, and I mean that with all respect. I don't want no Me Too movement coming at me or something like that.
I got you back.
I'm talking about they not afraid. You know, the TRPs, Hawkins, all them, Maisha, Hines Island, when they come in, they not having that. You know, we just going to. You're going to be physical. You're going to have to scrap.
The game changes. Every single time the game changes, because Seattle, they don't, as someone said today, they don't like physicality. Mm-hmm. Like, they like it on their terms. If they're the ones dishing it out, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of basketball players.
That's a lot of players, period.
True. Okay.
But, you know, they like it on their terms. And when that other group comes in, every single time we've seen that literally the tide of the game changes, because all that stuff, foul line down, no longer exists. Mm-hmm. Or you really got to fight for it. Someone's touching you up the closer you get to the basket. And we say that's usually when the miss is going runs, as you said, with that squad, that group that's in there. And, you know, the starters, they got to look themselves in the mirror and start playing with some sense of urgency. It can't just be that group coming off the bench every game, you know, that's providing that physicality and everything else. You know, Tiana Hawkins, you guys have to set that tone. It can't be... You know, it's good that you have a deep team, but you can't wait for them to come in the game and impose their will physically.
Because even with Atkins, she shot 4 for 15, but she was so aggressive, she got to the line 8 times. Mm-hmm. Not 8 times, but, you know, a few times she shot 8 free throws and made 7 of them. That's putting players pressure. In foul trouble, for keeping the pressure on you. You see what I'm saying? So she was aggressive. She just like, look, man, she was trying to get the win. But, you know, I look at some of the other Cloud guys step up, you can't go 0 for 5. You know, for 2 points, man. Like, that's why she only played 10 minutes. I don't know if she was hurt or ill, but, you know, it was the finals. No one cares.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just the truth. You know, Sue Bird playing. She on the Rip Hamilton right now with the mask, broke nose.
For the 5th time.
So, you know what I mean? But you see TRP played 28 minutes, and she shot 2 for 9, but her energy and defense, she helped check Stewie, who was going off. I mean, Stewie had, like, 10 in the first. So,
and refused to back down.
Yeah, they almost, you know, got in each other's face, and they're just like, what's up? You know, behind Zion, they got to get more consistency out of everybody. You know, even Deladon, she can't be off the hook, man. You can't go scoreless in the fourth, man. You know, it's just, you the franchise. You know, Stewie found a way, you got to find a way, man. Mm-hmm.
Look, man, you out there, and that's the thing that she said.
Talk about the knee.
She said several times after. Herself, there's no excuses. Talk about the knee after. The season's over.
Yeah.
So, as you said, you're not saying anything.
Especially
wrong
if you out there. You out there to play. I mean, we ain't out there to play around.
Exactly. In the finals, all that feels
all bets
good.
Are off. We don't got time for it.
Good. Because, and this is the one thing that upset me about game 1, and we talked about it, I kind of felt like it looked like they was reading their press clippings a little too much. You know, he was gassing them up too much, and they didn't respond well. There's no guarantee you won't get back to the finals. Don't look at the LeBron thing and think it's that easy. It's not that easy, especially in the WNBA where, you know, in the NBA it's more top heavy. You got like 4 or 5 teams with a legitimate shot. WNBA, man, it's just a seesaw. Like next this year.
You're in the suit last round. I didn't think we'd ever get back.
Exactly how bad they were last year. Look, I mean, a lot of the bottom teams, Dream, you know, Mystics were on around 500, the Storm. Next thing you know, they're battling to get to the finals. And Minnesota kind of went back. You see,
I say now the ace is about to have the number 1 pick all over again.
As we talk about teams 1 year at the bottom and come back up, the ace is going to be in that pitcher somewhere.
They
had
to get knocking on the door. Yeah. That right there, it's not
Atlanta with Angel coming, but like,
yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's not LA, they're going to be back on the mission. I see Candace working out with Kobe, trying to add more to the repertoire. Man, it's no guarantee you're going to get back, man. So you got to take advantage, though. Like, and I just didn't see that urgency. Like, I want them to have that 40 minutes. Now it's do or die. I expect to see that missing team that they got at Atlanta.
They went
off
that 10-game
Yeah, they got at Atlanta and all that. Both ends just going all out and stuff like that. So,
I guess that's the part that kind of saddens me a little bit. It shouldn't have had to get to this point for y'all to play the way that you've been playing consistently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it wasn't a 2-game win streak and a record, 3-game win streak. It was 10. You reeled off 10 wins, right? Then you get into the playoffs, and you're fighting tough again. For the most part, you've been fighting tough. You've had some issues, you know, some ups and downs, but to lay an egg in game one of the finals, it's
unacceptable. And that put him on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
LaToya Sanders, who played well,
yeah,
she got to be more physical, though. They bullying her.
And the other thing is, like, I know, and, you know, not so about excuses, but I know she's suffering with, like, anemia and things like that, of that nature. And I just kind of question at times, like, if she doesn't have it, she honestly just doesn't feel good. She probably doesn't need to be out there. Because she can't physically give you
the energy,
what mm-hmm. she needs, it can't, it's not helping the team.
Well, especially in this
That's
series.
What it is, because yeah.
Well, that's what
faced,
she got.
Yeah, but that's what she just faced some yeah. killers in the post yeah. with a dream.
I mean, all that combining,
and
is
she
not
played well against them, so that's why I was like, yeah. "No, what's up? It can't be the moment."
Nah,
you know, let's be for real. It's still the same team. It's just more cameras around. It's on national TV. Yep. You know, it's just you might see a little bit more articles floating around or whatever, but it's still the same.
Yeah,
and I don't know, man.
But that's what she's been suffering with a little bit.
Okay,
through this, but still.
But that's what yeah. But that's
you're
frustrating.
You on the floor, yeah.
That's what's frustrating. I can only imagine what the ball is feeling, because it's like, all right, one game. These group of players play well. All right, cool. We can get the other group. Then the next group game,
flip-flops.
Those same groups play bad, and the other group play
well. And you
want to
know what, like, the crazy part of this, and some of it is being lost, is outside of a couple players, it's part of having a young team. Like, you ups and downs, like, this is what it is. That being said, the mistakes that they're making, issues like turnovers and all that, that can't be ignored.
I can't blame it on the young team thing, because the players are not playing well the best.
Yeah,
the young players are playing well.
That's very true.
The best not playing well, so you know, outside like CRP, yeah. on the youngest, and sometimes it like some coaches say it pays to be young, because you don't quite grasp the moment. Yeah. You just hooping, you just whatever. I'm just let's go play.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
They got to put a full team together. You know, the best at home.
Do you
on
expect
court.
To see considering tomorrow night? You know, would be like literally do or die. You expect a quicker hook if the starters come out a little bit flat.
Of course.
It should be.
Of course.
There should be no cut cards at this point, because you ain't got no room for error at this point.
You got to survive.
It ain't nothing. It's either you out there to play and you out there to win, or you going to sit down next to me and I'm going to put somebody in who's going to do it.
Man, you keep beating off that screen and slip from Natasha Howard. She been killing them with all. Ooh, you got to come with me. You got to sit down. Like, you ain't learned yet.
Because I know you saw it on the tape. I know you've seen it in film.
You had game one. She did it how many times?
Look, she got the Robert Horry treatment. I'm not leaving. I don't know what to tell you.
No, but you want to know what? That's the honest to God truth, because if you think about it, like you said, with all her energy plays and the extra possessions that she garners, if you take like 5 of those away, you lost by 2, even without hitting a 3. Those are extra possessions. Instead, those possessions went right back to Seattle.
And then you got to look at it like this. With all the LaToya Sanders being so far in the game, they really have no shot blocker.
Mm-mm.
So they attacking the basket at will.
Was that? They both went 6'4", 6'5", between Stewie and Howard.
Mm-hmm. So they, not even just them, the guards too. Mm-hmm. So you got to guard. You got to be able to guard your man. You know, it can't, you know, hey, man, it's just, hopefully we get a full team effort, man. Everybody show up and do what they can do. If they do that, then Seattle just somehow pull out the victory. You shake their hand, they were the better team, man.
Yeah.
But right now, it's too much inconsistency from different players at the wrong time.
All right, man. We'll go ahead and move on to a rapid fire.
All right, you know, let's get to it. After the 33-13 loss in the Rams, the Raiders, that is, how do you look at John Gruden right now?
I want to go first on this one.
Please.
Okay.
The floor is yours.
All right, so my favorite part about this was this quote about, if pretty much something to the effect of, if they got after the quarterback board, that killed me. That was, I was talking to my guy who was a Raider fan earlier, my guy Heavy, and he was like, you could have said anything but that. Like, say anything but anything that has to do with Khalil Mack. Because we're cutting. Because that leads everyone to look at you like, a problem getting after the quarterback. You don't say.
Didn't you have somebody that used to do that?
I saw a fellow wearing 52 and white and orange on Monday night that he got after him pretty well.
Hey, I don't know what I'm looking at. He did a great job, Ruben. You got him out of the Love it. Holly, we good, baby.
I saw the card there yesterday. He was like,
I appreciate
it. Man, it's wonderful. We have the only one in the division.
The only beast. Yeah, Von Miller. Yep. Unless somebody else just emerged, but hey, good look, good luck. And they think it's bad with the Rams. Wait till the Chiefs come. That offense, man, the way they So, hey, man. You want to go?
No, he said everything.
I'm sorry. The Jets said they knew Stafford's signals, you know, after, you know, they beat the Lions handily 48-17. Darren Lee, the linebacker, said, we were calling out their plays as he was getting up to the line. And they proceeded to intercept Stafford four times. We knew his signals. He said we knew everything. That's just preparation as a defense. It seemed like we were in his head as a defense. And, you know, there's rumors out there saying they shouldn't be stealing their signals, blah, blah, blah. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, if you pay attention enough to know things like that, then, I mean, that shouldn't be no fault of your own. That's just my thought behind it. I could see if they were, like, lurking in their locker room trying to figure out their signals. That's different.
Recording it.
Exactly. But, I know, I wasn't going to say that. But I'm saying, like, if they studied their film enough, and obviously he has to call the signals out, and there's a gajillion cameras around at all times, if they paid attention to it enough where they were able to figure it out like that, that's crazy. Because literally, pretty much anywhere he threw, they knew what was happening. I don't think he knew what was happening. I think they knew where he was supposed to throw the ball, and he didn't know where he was supposed to throw the ball. Because it was real bad. And all I kept thinking with this game is I was like, this is your quarterback. You know how, like, in Black Panther, they'd be like, is this your king?
Oh, man.
Is this your quarterback? I'm just saying. It was bad, y'all. I know it's the first game of the season, and we're not supposed to, you know, get up in arms about things like this, but it was bad. On Monday night, on the opening game, it was bad.
Man, I feel like if you're the head coach, you got to go have a talking to with the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You got to have a talking to. Because as you guys said, if you're recording it or doing something like that, all right, you went out, you know, that you went out the realm. If it's literally just film study, your playbook's basic. You should probably add some variations onto it.
And allow your quarterback to audible. It's a reason why I pay Manning to go up there like Omaha. He's thinking about a completely different play. Like, the food of defense, man. Have them rotating everything. Oh, you rotate that way? We going to go this way. He'll literally go up to like 2 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, all right, go. You know what I'm saying? So, and the only player that I seen when that would match, like, it was like a chess game was Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis and everybody, nah, go over there, go over there. And that's why their games be low scoring. That was a mental chess game between them. But it's the reason why you got to allow your quarterbacks to audible. You switch things up. Because, yeah, defenses are smart, too. They're trying to stop you, so they're going to figure things out. I don't understand why people are up in arms about them stealing their signals. You steal offensive players' tendencies. You do that across sports. So you could try to stop
them. That's what I'm saying. It's a part of how you study the film. Like,
yeah, literally not the point of film study. Like, that's literally
like
the point of
everybody in the world finals knew KD when he was dribbling up. He was going to do the little half hezzy and pull up. Come forward. Like, we all knew that.
Did you do anything about it?
So, we knew that coming. Like, he about to pull up. And then they still don't do it. Come on, man.
And the other thing is, like, so many, you know, some of the innovative play callers in the game, you know, the McVays, Shanahan, Doug Peterson, they go to the line with 3 plays.
Right.
Like, it's 2018. Most people go to the line. The quarterback goes to the line with 3 plays, with 2 to 3 plays, and you can talk to him until 15 seconds left on the play clock.
Right.
How, Sway? Seriously?
Mm-hmm. Someone just looks so bad.
Job going.
It just looks so bad.
It was funny.
Okay. Tom Brady says Aaron Rodgers is so much more talented than he is. Via tweet from Ian O'Connor, Tom Brady once told the NFL coach, if Aaron Rodgers had the Patriots' offensive scheme and institutional knowledge on opposing defenses, he throw for 7,000 yards every year. He's so much more talented than me. So it sounds like we had this conversation just yesterday. But
literally yesterday, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of agree.
Kind of.
You know, I'm trying to put it out there a little bit at a time. But I mean, because we can already tell that he's a better athlete than him, you know, and if they're not matched mentally the same as far as IQ, you know, like you would think the athleticism would give him a little bit of a boost, but it's just that the Patriots, like you said, like they work as a whole, like organization and in a unit, like it just matches so well. So it allows the quarterback to be that great. Not saying that without it, Tom Brady wouldn't be great, but it enhances it. So it makes it easier. It makes you, you know, more aware of how good he is to work in that scheme. I mean, we talk about that with a lot of players all the time. People used to talk about Richard Sherman wasn't that great if he wasn't in a different formation or in a different set or whatever, but what they do works for him and it makes him look good, which is the point. So I think it's really big of him to say that if that's really how he feels, especially, I mean, you know, to me, those are the top two quarterbacks in the league. Like, I don't know what anybody else has to say, but I definitely agree. So,
yeah. no lies told here, but from Tom, obviously, like, Aaron's more talented, but Tom's maximized everything he was given, which shouldn't be overlooked.
Exactly.
Also, you know, Belichick's one of the smartest minds. Exactly. So, again, Tom's not lying. I think it's bigger time to say, like, to just look over yourself and just, like, acknowledge that dude as his own. That's a really special guy. But, you know, his circumstances. No lies. I think it's cool to see an athlete, you know, show love.
Sometimes you just got to be real.
Like, yep.
You know, but Bill Russell said this, and a lot of people don't really understand what he was saying. He said it's not what you have. It's what you do with what you have. Like, you could be more talented than me and still be a worse player than me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not saying Aaron Rodgers is, like he said, if he would have played, if everything was set up like it is for him, dude, it would be worse.
He would have broke the league.
You see what I'm saying? So, yeah. You know, he's not, he's giving props and stuff like that. But that's kudos to the work that Tom Brady put in, because you see a lot of athletes waste a lot of talent. Like, people don't, I remember late 2000 when I, athletically, Josh Smith and LeBron were on par with Josh, the stuff they were doing and stuff, you know, transition and everything. But we all know Josh Smith was not even close to being a player LeBron is.
Yep.
So, same size, weight, crazy athleticism. I mean, Josh, just take off and one step inside the free throw line, dunk on foot is like, I mean, it was sick. You know what I'm saying? But you see how quickly, once the fall of time started hitting, and then he had to rely on the skill. The skill wasn't up to par with LeBron, just keeps. You know, arguably made last year was his best, you know, his best year. So, you know, like I said, man, you got to maximize what you have. But like you said, that was big at times because a lot of players when they said that.
Right.
Oh, man. Washington. The football team is my boy. The Regal would say the Washington football team said they're not interested in Dez Bryant despite wide receiver issues with Trey Quinn, Cam Sims going down with ankle injuries. Maurice Harris still in concussion protocol. Redskins right now just had three healthy receivers, Jameson Crowder, Doxson, and then Paul Richardson. Right move not to look at this, or they should look at them. Come on, Eagles.
I mean,
Petty on line 3,
go ahead. Hello, it's like now. I mean, I feel like they should look at everybody. You know, especially with only having three healthy wide receivers. If somebody can help your organization, then that should be who it is, regardless of where they came from, who they played for, or anything like that. But if they feel like Dez doesn't fit their scheme, because I feel like the issue with Dez right now across the league is that a lot of people get the feeling that he doesn't want to adjust to what needs to be adjusted in his game. So I feel like they probably may possibly think that it wouldn't be a good fit because Dez is still going to want to do what Dez has done in the past. But Dez's body is not going to let him do that no more. But Dez's brain think he could still do it. So I think that that's part of his issue of why it's so hard for him to find a place to go, because the quote that killed me is like, I'm not going to sign now. I might sign later in the year. Like, what you mean you might sign later in the year? Like, you this ain't no pick and choose when you ready to go. It's like, what team wants you? If they want you, they going to come get you. That not that they want you because they have nobody else. And it's like, that to me, that when he made that comment, that's what it sounded like he banking on. I'm just waiting for somebody somewhere to get hurt, and they're going to come knocking on my door. He's going to be sitting at home waiting like T.O. been waiting for the past 20 years. You know, like, you got to adjust to like we always say, Father Time is undefeated. Like, you got to adjust. Look at how Larry Fitzgerald has adjusted from what he used to do in the past and adjusted to a slot receiver. Dez doesn't seem willing to do that. So I get why a lot of teams aren't looking at him. Because if you weren't willing to do that with the Cowboys, your team, your home team, like you was there forever, like what makes a lot of people think that you were going to be willing to do that somewhere else? But at the end of the day, I still feel like if the Redskins feel like he would make their team better, they should look at him solely on that. It shouldn't be based off of, you know, extracurriculars, stuff that's off the field or anything like that. It should be straight football if they think he can make them better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. There's a lot of, like, you got former first rounders within the last 2 or 3 years out here on the waiver wire. There's, like, how football works, man. That's what they're going to take a flyer on. You're going to take a flyer on one of those young studs that went in the first round that maybe ended up in a bad situation, and you'll take a flyer on them because they don't really have a choice but to accept a limited role, right? You don't even have to have – they don't even have to have that conversation with one of those kids. So, yeah, I know the Redskins re-signed Brian Quick earlier today. I know he's – you know, he was there last year. He knows the offense at least. I just think, you know, it's a part of it. I don't think they have to overreact or do anything like that because, say, you know, Maurice Harris clears concussion protocol or whatever, right? You sign Dez, now what? You know, like, just seriously. And even last week, if you look in week one, how Alex was going to work, they didn't need to have 4 or 5 wide receivers anyways. So I would just let it run its course. I think signing Brian Quick at this moment is enough, and that should be it.
This is certain athletes, unfortunately, because of their character and they were younger, it catches up to them. Like, you know, like in DeMarcus Cousins, who I'm a fan of, okay, the Achilles was a bad injury, but we've seen players before come off injury still get that money. It's the combination of that, and then, man, what are we going to get with that other stuff?
Mm-hmm.
We don't feel like touching that. People got to understand that catches up to you. So now when you become expendable, you're not that good. And he never really became a student game as far as route running and everything. He just tried to beat DBs off of, you know, physicality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so once you don't have that and that starts to wane and you're not a technician as far as, you know, route running and everything, how can you help a team? Combine that with if you're not playing, how will your attitude be? Because looking back in the past, you know, you won't go off. Now we got a distraction. And we got to focus on this instead of focusing on trying to win football games. So I can understand the side, man. Sometimes you got to get in where you fit in and prove yourself, man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, it sucks. But I feel like he can help a team. But, you know, honestly, man, you just need to fall back and just wait for a call. You know, the tweeting and stuff is not helping his case and all that. And so you know how that go.
Last question.
Michael Beasley report. When they played in Miami, used to play LeBron one-on-one in practices, and according to Tom Haberstroh, who used to cover the Heat, said Michael Beasley would beat LeBron one-on-one every time. Like, he's that good. A lot of people consider that, you know, as being kind of a shocking, you know, but what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I had mine, you know, I don't know why, but.
I'll go last.
I know what you're laughing. I want to know now. Say that. I want to see the tape first and foremost. But I personally, from seeing Mike play since middle school and all the way up, I can see it. I can definitely see it because he has the skill and he has the athleticism. To me, like, Mike was always just missing, like, just that maturity aspect of being in the league. Like, I really feel like if he first got in a really good situation where he was around a lot of good vets and he was around a lot of good people that could kind of keep him focused, he would be in a different place than he is now. But he still, you know, a lot of people don't even get the chances that he's gotten in the league and still being being in the league now, like being people talking about you, like being in, like around, like a lot of people don't get those second chances like that. A lot of people don't play on an NBA team, go to China and still come back. There are only a handful of people that were really able to do stuff like that. And those are people with special talents where people realize that, okay, you're in a bad situation. Nobody needed you at this time, but now we need you. Let's get you back in here. So I could definitely see it. I'm kind of concerned at why this is coming out now. Like, what was the motivation behind somebody saying this? But it is what it is. But I could definitely see that they match well. They have the same build. They have the same, you know, type of play. Mike is good. He just has always been in bad situations at nobody's fault but his own. But I definitely could see that being a possibility.
Cardale.
I mean, look, offensively, as far as scoring, he's one of the most talented players I've seen. He had it at every level, and I can't give him an excuse with Miami because Wade and all those guys were there. You know, that was basically a few years removed from the championship coach of Riley and all that. So that was more him just being young and immature and stuff like that. Maybe in Minnesota, Phoenix, but at some point you can't keep blaming the coach. You're a man, you know what I'm saying? So you're going to do what you want to do. And that's my thing. You know, I had to put out there on Facebook the other day, like, since when we become in society, you can just say and do what you want and act like consequences should come from that. That confuses the hell out of me. There's plenty of people I won't mind busting upside their head, but I know I'm going to go to jail. So I'm like, you know, you're not worth it, let me chill. But offensively, there's no question, man. He had it all. It was child's play. I mean, he was every level. Like, high school was ignorant. Mm-hmm. Then in Kansas State, it's just like, why is this dude here? You know, come on, man, let this dude go to the league. This is a tryout. This is all he's doing. It was easy. Like, easy. So he always had the gifts and stuff. It was just, like you said, the maturity. And also applying that talent to other aspects of the game outside of scoring, mm-hmm. defensively. That's why it's hard for him to stay on the floor, because defensively, you know, pay attention. And the things, he has the tools to be a great defender and stuff, a standout defender. One thing I kind of see that hasn't translated that I'm shocked by is the rebounding. He was a monster rebounder at every level. Now he only averaged, 4.8 for his career. Yeah, I mean, it's not – I mean – even his career, he shoots 46% for his career from the field and 35% from three. You see, and he's twice shot 40% or above from three-point range. You know, like 76% career free throw shooting. Offensively, he got it. It's not even a question. Scoring-wise. Now, assist-wise, he don't make plays for other 1.3. It's holes in his game. But you always need a reliable scorer, you know what I'm saying, to play with. And obviously, playing him with LeBron, it's going to be the easiest buckets he ever had. You know what I'm saying? Just spot up and shoot. So that's where I think the story came out, how they going to mesh, because people just, you know how people just talk. They just see Mike as a clown outside people. But I'm like, you can see him as that all you want, but he's a talented dude, like, regardless of what you think. So, I mean, that's why that came about. And I'm not shocked he could beat LeBron one-on-one or whatever, because if he gets going, it's hard to stop him. I mean, I've seen him hit like 12 in a row in a game against the Wizards, like, and ball don't even touch around. He's just out there target, you know, like a shooting drill. He got it all. He could post. He could score from all three levels. Left-handed, awkward. I mean, athletic and finish. He's a problem.
Hey, man, exactly what you said. It's laughable to me that people even surprised by this. Dude's been a walking bucket since probably birth. So some people are gifted at certain things. He's never had an issue putting the ball in the basket. You know, I agree with everything you said. You know, he just never took the time to put the energy into the rest of his game to fill out as a complete player, and focus issues and maturity. Had a great situation in Miami, messed that up, being immature. But still, the talent, the fact that you're still around the league, like Octavia said, talented people get so many chances. Mm-hmm. So you know how talented you got to be to get chance 6, 7, 8, 9, mm-hmm. 10, 12.
Like Randy Moss.
Dude, I'm just saying, where you could just mess up and they like, look, he going to get it. He going to get it. He going to get it. Well, we won't let him mess it up. But want to thank you guys for tuning in, man. We'll see you guys next week. Same time, same place. Get ready to find us, Mag, my mind on sports.com. You've been watching the Focus TV.